Music from Donnie and Joe Emerson here for you on KPFK and Melting Pot. That comes from a reissue of their one and only record, Dreamin' Wild, put out by Light in the Attic. Light in the Attic, as a label, is celebrating their 10th anniversary, and in our studios today is the head of the label, Matt Sullivan. How are you doing, Matt?
Good. Nice to be here.
It is a real pleasure to bring you in. Big fan of the label for some time, and it seems like Each of these 10 years just been getting better and better.
Thank you.
So, you know, really nice to have you in and talk about the label and talk about some of this music and share some stories, especially about that record. But, why don't we start at the beginning, in a way, and just how did you get together this label, Light in the Attic? How did it start?
We started in 2002. It was just me at the time, solo. My business partner now, Josh Wright. We had a high school radio station outside Seattle, Washington. Uh-huh. It was a 10-watt, 89.3 FM KASB. You could not hear it 2 miles away, but it was on the FM dial, and it was a good time with music and everything in Seattle. So I became the music director as the teachers felt that I was the only person who would not steal all the CDs. So that's kind of where I was a music fan, but that's where I really got involved with a little deeper into music. And then after in college, I did a study abroad in Spain, and I worked for a label called Munzer Records, which is, they have a sub, Vampy Soul now.
Yeah.
And, that was the first time I kind of, you know, really, started, you know, they were educating me on the, you know, bands like the Small Faces and the Stooges and the Monks and Spaceman 3 and a whole kind of world of things that seem so obvious now, and you know, to a lot of people obvious then, but you know, I was a college kid, 1996, '97, and didn't have a clue. And so that kind of, I wanted to do a label the whole time, but it was kind of like, wow, what about maybe doing some contemporary music and finding these old, you know, gems. And that's where I started, kind of thinking about it in a larger perspective, and then came back here and finally started labeling up about 2002. And then Josh, a biz partner, came on board soon after. And, so yeah, that was kind of the birth.
Okay, and it seems like that experience of working for Munzer was kind of the formative one, because in thinking about a period of time, early 2000s, there were still a fair amount of reissue labels, but it seems like you know, it's been into the 21st century, kind of well after you guys started, that we really saw kind of an explosion of reissue labels. And so at that time, there weren't too many that were doing it.
No, there weren't. I mean, there were. Now it's just there's so many more people doing it, which is exciting.
Mm.
But then, yeah, with different, totally different climate. I dug up something the other day of our, when I first starting out trying to figure out what I wanted to reissue.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like two or three pages of just kind of a breakdown of all these reissues. And most of them never happened. But, you know, the reason I brought that up is just a lot of it was major label titles. And at that time, it was very hard to license from majors, being someone, you know, brand new into it. And mm-hmm. now I think that's an easier task, but it's still difficult. We license from majors and indies and people like that all the time. But the ball game's definitely changed. It's nice to see people putting more care into it now. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, back then in the early 2000s, I mean, Rhino was kind of the big fish
in,
you know,
yeah, in the US. I mean, that was virtually all reissues.
Yeah.
It seemed like they came from Rhino.
Yeah. I mean, there was other people, of course, but you know, a lot of the better ones I'd say were more, you know, Europe or UK. But Rhino was, you know, of course, a big influence on us, and things like Nuggets and with Lenny K and people like that to put that stuff together. So it's interesting. I mean, to think we're doing this 10 years, I feel pretty lucky.
Was there any inkling when you were starting off that this is, you know, this is something that not only that you want to do for a really long time, but did you expect to be kind of at this point in this 10 years or even moving forward?
Well, I want to say, yeah, I did, but, no, I don't think so. I mean, I don't think so. Especially kind of I feel very proud of what we've accomplished and artists we've been able, you know, honored to work with literally. And,
mm-hmm.
and, no, I didn't expect, you know, I'd hoped that we'd still be around, but no. And now I can see it as, you know, I think, I can see this doing this for the rest of my life. There's nothing else I'd rather be doing. I feel pretty fortunate to wake up in the morning and, you know, be able to, you know, people like Rodriguez and all these mm-hmm. artists and Donnie and Joe that we just listened to. You know, it's a good thing.
Could you talk a little bit about the differences between kind of running a label that's primarily about reissues as opposed to maybe one that, because you do put out every now and again some contemporary artists, like you put out most of the records from the Black Angels for a good long while, but most of kind of your bread and butter is reissues. And could you maybe talk a little bit about how, like, the differences of kind of running that kind of label versus a more one focus on contemporary music?
Yeah, at this time we've put out about 100 records in the 10-year period, and maybe five, six, seven at the mm-hmm. most have been contemporary artists.
Yeah.
It's been a few years since we've done that. I'd like to do that again, but it's a, you know, to answer your question, it's a different beast. It's but we really look at the reissues as even if the artist is, you know, Lee Hazelwood or Serge Gainsbourg or Karen Dalton who's passed, you know, we really look at it as a contemporary record, where our goal all along was to not just go after, say, how can we, you know, do this beautifully, but just put it out there and the collector audience will buy it, you know, bless their souls. But, you know, I feel that, you know, my mom, who's 70, would really like Lee Hazelwood or really mm-hmm. like T.L. Barrett and these records if she, you know, could be educated about them, and young kids who are, you know, just getting into music. So for us, that's a big part of it. And artists who are live, you know, Michael Chapman and Rodriguez and these other folks, and Donnie and Joe trying to set up shows for them, and looking at it as a kind of a bigger perspective thing. I mean, I feel that just because they're reissues doesn't mean that you know, they have no they're not valid today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's important. The records we pick that a that we like them, but b that they fit into, you know, 2012 or whatever year we're in. They need to be timeless, and that's important. So, you know, we're always dealing with egos, but a little less egos with these types of artists than a contemporary artist.
Yeah.
Different field or whatever, but I love contemporary music. Don't get me wrong. There's great records today. It's just harder and harder. I really have to, you know, congratulate people that are still doing it, because it's gotten really tough to be making music in 2012, and you know, bless their souls.
Do you think in some ways running a reissue label is I mean, thinking about kind of so many people talking about the decline of the music industry over the last whatever amount of years, it seems like it's always in decline, but it especially seems like it's been in decline of late. But do you feel like in some ways, because you are kind of pick and choosing from these records from the past that you're trying to kind of bring to other audiences because of their classic appeal, do you feel like in some ways it's a little bit easier kind of running this kind of label as opposed to having a gang of A&R people trying to search for the next new thing?
Much easier, much easier. I mean, we find things we enjoy and our, you know, friends turn us on to them and it snowballs from there. So it's, yeah, I can't say that enough. Much easier, you know. And I love contemporary music, and you know, labels who are doing it now, you know, they're really having to. A lot of them are struggling. But I mean, this year has been our best year ever, and I mean, every year we've had a slow progression. Mm-hmm. But I felt it a lot more this year, just seeing the more output we've had, the records we've done, the response we've had, and for us, our sales, you know, I've never really declined. It's not like they're, you know, people talk about a vinyl revival, and for us, we've been doing vinyl since the first record in 2002, The Last Poets, but we're still selling a good amount of vinyl in 2012 versus 2002, but people are still buying CDs, and mm-hmm. you know, for us, they're we want to create a release that doesn't feel disposable, you know, and is you know, a coffee table book type of vibe, and is a, you know, these records for us are timeless, and they deserve to have packaging and presentation that reflects the music.
How do you go about choosing the records? I mean, you talked earlier about how you had this big long list from the early days and realized that there was a lot of stuff that you didn't get to, and you've kind of moved past that, it would seem. But how do you go about choosing particular records to reissue?
It's completely random. It's the first thing everyone always asks us, and I always I need to find a better answer. But here on the radio, I'll tell you, it's totally random. You know, Donnie and Joe Emerson, friend of ours, Andy Zaks, went over to his house, and we're talking about just weird kind of teenage records and kid records. And I always said, God, it'd be great to do I always want to do like a children's comp of these very, you know, mature songs. And so he pulled out that record. He had the original album, pulled out the cover, and it's like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, you know, no, it's such that Donnie and Joe Emerson, we started the interview off with, it's a really rare record. I mean, it's a tough record to find. I don't know how many did they press of that?
Funny enough, they pressed about 2,000, but I think they sold about 6.
Yeah.
At the local high school with 13 kids.
Yeah.
Literally. So, yeah, it was underground, but you know, that kind of thing. Andy played me the record. I was like, this is fantastic.
Yeah, you look at it and you see the cover, and on the reissue that you guys have done, it's the, you know, reproduction of the original cover. And you look at that and it looks like, I don't even know how you would describe
it.
It's
kind of like Partridge Family.
Yeah.
You know, they're wearing these Elvis type jumpsuits that are, you know, their zippers all halfway down their chest. They're like feathered hair, white kids, late 70s.
You would never guess the sounds that come out of that record. But as soon as you drop the needle on that record, especially on a song like Baby, that it's mind-blowing in a way.
Yeah.
And it is something that, you know, so few people probably knew about that record in general before you guys reissued it. And it's been able to get a whole new audience. And so many more people now know about Donnie and Joe Emerson.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. It's had a really good response. But when we first, you know, when I first contacted the Emersons, and we, you know, they're just wonderful people, but that's a whole other story of just going out to the farm. We stayed there and made this little kind of doc about it. But the response has been tremendous. But it was something I didn't expect, the response it's had. You know, Ariel Pink is with Dame Funk, did that great cover.
Yeah, I was getting ready to ask you about that.
Patrick of Light in the Attic, that was his idea, and we contacted Ariel and said, oh, wait, what about you and Dame doing this together? And next thing we know, Dame's doing the Instagram of photos of them in the studio cutting it, and it was it was just amazing. The Emersons were blown away by it, and but you know, first when we listen to the album, it's one of those moments of, this record is so good, having no idea what, I mean, other than the cult audience on the web who had been you know, talking about it for a couple of years, I have no idea what the world would think of it. It's a unique piece of art.
Yeah.
So it's really touching. I mean, there was a big New York Times feature on Thursday where they flew out to the farm and interviewed them and took all these great photos. And, you know, when I was at the farm 2 years ago, to ever think New York Times would fly to Fruitland, Washington to interview them? No, I mean, but that's wonderful to see.
Yeah.
You know, it's really, I couldn't be happier for them.
Yeah, and it really speaks to a point that you were making earlier about how a lot of this music continues to speak to contemporary audiences. When you listen to that Ariel Pink version, if you'd never known that it was a cover, you know, it would have been something that fit just perfectly in their repertoire to begin with.
Yeah.
And what they do with the song, it's very similar to the original version, but it kind of clears a few things up, and it's a great, great song, and that perfect kind of connection, as mm-hmm. You were saying, between the past and the present.
Yeah.
And also, they're performing at the 10-year anniversary show, too.
They're at
the Seattle one, right?
Yeah, we would like to get them down here eventually, but it's their first show, the two of them, in 30-something years.
Wow.
It's the first time they've ever played in Seattle. They've never played outside of Washington, mm-hmm. as, you know, the brothers. So it should be... it's going to be really good. It's in Seattle. It's Michael Chapman, Rodriguez, and Donnie and Joe Emerson. And then in L.A., that's in October. And then in L.A., September 28th at the El Rey, is Rodriguez, Michael Chapman, Shin Jun Huen, and Stephen John Kalinich. So I had some music in here we were going to listen, play from those guys' records.
Yeah, why don't we, you know, we've been talking a little bit about this label, Light in the Attic, with the label head and founder Matt Sullivan, and why don't we get to some of the music from these past 10 years and maybe also thinking about the future as well from Light in the Attic. What did you have queued up for us first here?
The next one is it's brand new. We haven't released it yet. It's a Charles Bradley and the Menahan Street Band covering Rodriguez's first single from 1967 called "I'll Slip Away." We're doing a series of 7-inch singles to coincide with the anniversary, and the A side will be a cover of a song we've reissued, while the flip side will be the original tune.
Okay, when is this going to get released?
This one will probably be out by, let's say, October, November. We're still putting it together,
okay.
But we just got they just finished cutting it.
Oh,
and
wow!
This is the first time it's ever been played.
Wow!
So
wow.
Yeah.
Exclusive.
Exclusive. You have it right here on the Melting Pot.
I wish I had that echo effect.
Yes.
But so some brand new music from Charles Bradley and the Menahan Street Band, celebrating the 10th anniversary of Light in the Attic, here for you right now on KPFK and Melting Pot.
I tell who I want, where to go. Babe, gonna catch the train. Bye, babe, gonna catch the train. Bye, babe, gonna catch the train.
You're listening to KPFK and Melting Pot. We're in the middle of an interview and guest DJ set with Matt Sullivan of Light in the Attic Records, kind of taking us through the first 10 years of the label. What did we just hear from in that last set, Matt?
That was Lee Hazelwood, Bye Babe. We've been in the process of putting together a kind of massive, our most daunting project, a big Lee Hazelwood series. We found all the master tapes for a label he had called LHI, Lee Hazelwood Industries, from 66 to 71. Found the tapes up in North Hollywood, not far from here, actually, down the road. 400 reels.
So wow.
We've been going through this great transferring engineer, Brian Kehu, also local, just digging through all these tapes. And so
was it a situation where, like, literally somebody just found the tapes, or no, were they, like, in storage? Or
They were, funny enough, they were at his publisher's. and no one really knew until we contacted the publisher and kind of said, hey, any chance you guys got any tapes? And yeah, we have a few actually, and go down there and literally in a back room. And they'd done a good job of like keeping them in a climate controlled room.
Oh,
and even organized them. This guy Chernoff in there did an incredible job organizing them, which saved us a lot of time. But no one had transferred them and actually listened to them. And so that was the process we're doing right now. But it was Lee's records, but also LHI had a couple dozen other records he produced, and also a woman named Susie Jane Hokum. So it's, you know, everything from like sunshine pop to R&B to country music, folk, Lee's own records, psychedelic rock. I mean, it's really, other than maybe hip hop, it's really, and metal, all everything. So, and before that was Eddie Spencer, If This Is Love, I'd Rather Be Lonely. Came from a comp we did a few years back called Jamaica to Toronto, 1967 to 1974, that a collector, DJ, and music historian in Toronto and Vancouver put together, named Kevin Cipriano Howes. And it focuses on the Jamaican community who moved to Toronto during that time and cut all these incredible records, guys who played Lee Perry and Bob Marley in Jamaica. And they went to Toronto because Canada had better immigration policies and they wouldn't be trapped for Vietnam. And growing up in the Northwest, I had no earthly idea that there was, you know, two Jamaican people in Toronto. And actually these days there's like, I think 300,000. It's a huge population. So
yeah, it's something I wasn't aware of it either until kind of becoming aware of it from that collection and just like how strong that community is. And also just how vibrant the music coming out of it was.
So much good music. And, so yeah, that was kind of focused on the first part of the series we did, which is more kind of the soul with the Caribbean influence, and then it goes kind of more into dub and reggae. And I think we started the set off with Charles Bradley and the Manhattan Street Band covering Rodriguez's All Slip Away.
How did that come together? You know, you were saying how this is part of kind of the 10th anniversary celebration, that you're bringing some contemporary artists together to cover some of the artists who've been on the label. How did you get a hold of, you know, the folks from Daptone and Dunham to get that together?
Mostly just kind of thought about people that we were either friends with or knew that were fans of the artists or the label, and thought, well, we don't really want to make this a big, long, drawn-out headache, and it'd be nice to work with people who are just passionate about it like we are. So, you know, we've known, you know, Neil and Tommy and all the guys at Daptone for years. They've been big Light in the Attic supporters. So, and Charles's record was like probably my favorite record last year.
Yeah, it was one of mine as
well. Yeah, so good. So, and so good live. And he's a huge Rodriguez open for him at the Bowery Ballroom in New York in December. And Charles just loves Rodriguez, and so does Tommy. So it seemed like a good fit. And the other people, you know, the next song we're going to play is Iggy Pop and the Zigzags, which is a new local group, really good band.
Local here in L.A.?
Local here in L.A. Doing Betty Davis's If I'm in Luck, I Might Get Picked Up. And long story short, we were working with Iggy Pop years ago on this project that never came out, and called him back up and said, hey, would you want to do this cover of Betty Davis? And he said, sure. So myself and Patrick from Light in the Attic, we flew to Miami and recorded Iggy's vocal and a few months back, and it was awesome. He was a wonderful, just humble guy and totally prepared to practice it. And so this is that cover.
All right, here we go. Once again, sitting in with Matt Sullivan of Light in the Attic Records, celebrating 10 years, putting out music. And here's another special track celebrating that 10th anniversary, Iggy Pop covering Bette Davis here on KPFK and Melting Pot.
I might just get picked up. I said I'm vicious, trick, and you can call it what you want then. I said I'm wiggling my fanny. I want you dancing, I'm doing it. This is my night out. Don't you crush my velvet, don't you ruffle my feathers neither. I said I'm crazy, I'm wild. I said I'm nasty. Say you will for a little while. Say you will. I said if I'm in luck, I might just get picked up. I said I'm vamping, tramping, you can call it what you wanna. I said I'm wiggling my fanny. I want you dancing, I'm a moving it. Try not to pass out. Say you will. Say you will. Say you will. Say you will. Take me home. Take me home. Take me home. Take me home. If I'm walking like I should, maybe you might pick me up. If I'm looking real good, baby, you might pick me up. If I knew what to say, baby, you might pick me up. If I met you tonight, baby, you might pick me up. Take me home. Take me home.
it a huntsman or a player that made you pay the cost, that now assumes relaxed positions and prostitutes your loss? Were you tortured by your own thirst in those pleasures that you seek, that made you Tom the Curious, that makes you James the Weak? And you claim you got something going, something you call unique. But I've seen your self-pity showing as the tears roll down your cheeks. Soon you know I'll leave ya, and I'll never look behind, 'cause I was born for the purpose that crucifies your mind. So convince your mirror, as you've always done before, giving substance to shadows, giving substance evermore. And you assume you got something to offer, secret shiny in you. But how much of you is repetition that you didn't whisper to him too?
That is music from Rodriguez here on KPFK in Melting Pot. One of the selections from Matt Sullivan, who runs the record label Light in the Attic, which reissued the music of Rodriguez. And also, if memory serves correctly, also involved on the soundtrack for the new documentary, Searching for Sugarman, too.
Yes, yeah, so we're doing the soundtrack with Sony Legacy.
Okay. Tell me about that. That whole, I mean, both kind of the reissues and kind of bringing Rodriguez's music back out into the public, and also just the kind of response to this documentary about him as well.
Yeah, first off, the film is fantastic. I'm biased, but see the movie. I promise you, you'll enjoy it. Searching for Sugar Man. It's playing at a few theaters in Los Angeles right now, the Landmark on Pico and Pasadena. I think you mentioned a few other places, but Cold Fact by Rodriguez, which is, we heard Crucify Your Mind, but Cold Fact's the name of the album from 1970. That's my favorite thing we've ever released. Mm. For me, that was like...
I was going to ask you that at the end. Yeah,
a pilgrimage, just going to Detroit and meeting him with my business partner, Josh, and that was about 05 or so. Mm. So it was a long, long process to get there and to finally license the record. But working with him, it's just been, I come back to the word an honor, but it really has been an honor with him, and just to see someone as just humble and sweet and genuine and sincere as him, getting the recognition he's finally getting now is pretty touching. I went out for he played on Letterman a few weeks ago. I went out for that. I was like, I can't miss this, you know, and definitely didn't ever think that was going to happen. But it's been great. I mean, the shows have all been selling out, and our reissues came out about 08, I think, was Cold Fact. And then 09 was, he had a second record called Coming From Reality. And they did great, but you know, with the film, which is, you know, his first time director, Malik Benjalou, a Swedish director, he's the one who made it, and pretty young, like early 30s. And he just, went to, you know, all over the world traveling. And, you know, I'd rather not say, if you haven't seen it, the least you know about the story, the better. So
in some ways, but you've gotten a taste, there. And Rodriguez is going to be playing at the 10th anniversary show here in Los Angeles as well, right?
Yeah. The El Rey Theater. Correct. Yeah.
And also the artist who was in the middle of that set, I think, is going to be there too.
Yeah, that was Shin Jung Hoon. He's the kind of, I think I read recently some quote, he was the Brian Wilson, Simon Cowell, and Phil Spector of Korean music or something, which is hilarious. But very influential. He's been making records since 1958. He's about 74 or 5 years old. He's played in outside Asia maybe 3 or 4 times, so it's pretty rare to see him on this bill. Mm-hmm. So very much looking for that. I've never seen him play or met him, so he's flying here from South Korea.
Yeah, that should be a pretty amazing time. It was an incredible collection that really spanned a wide variety of different sounds from his career from last year. Another one of my favorites of the entire year.
Thank you.
And just incredible stuff. And then starting things off, we had this new song from Iggy Pop, part of the 10th anniversary celebration of Light in the Attic. And that's also going to be available on a 7-inch?
Yeah, the Charles Bradley and Iggy Pop and the Zigzags, they'll all be separate 7-inches available here over the next few months. That's going to be the first one. Mm. We're hoping to get them done. We just approved the test pressings. We're hoping to have it done for the El Rey Theater show September 28th. If not, it'll be the Seattle show October 12th. But we are happy just to get the test pressings out of the way. That's always a big feat when it comes. Patrick Light in the Attic, he deals with that, and I got to hand it to him because it's hard. But yeah, we're very excited for that one.
What else is coming down the pipe from Light in the Attic?
We have more 7-inches in that series. We're going to be doing the Ariel Peak Dame Funk baby single with the Donnie and Joe on the flip side. A really great group from Seattle called Gold Leaves, fairly new, but they're doing a Lee Hazelwood cover. There's quite a few other. Mark Lanigan's doing a Karen Dalton song.
Oh wow!
And then after that, we're in October reissuing a record releasing for the first time a record from 1971 by Ray Stinnett. He was the guitarist in Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs, who we all know for Woolly Bully.
Mm-hmm.
Great record he cut in Memphis at Arden and Fame. And Booker T was executive producer. Richard Roseborough, who's the guy who recorded Chris Bell and Big Star, he was the engineer. It's a fantastic kind of country soul, a little bit of like psychedelic rock. The record got shelved. It was supposed to come out on A&M, and Ray and A&M butted heads, and everything was literally done. I mean, the artwork was created, and they butted heads and they let him out of his contract. And so all the rights reverted back to him. And he still had the masters and the original print files of the artwork. And, been a great project. He lives in Lake Elsinore. And we're working on he's going to be performing at Mount Analog, that new record store in Highland Park, for the record release party Sunday, October 7th, in the late afternoon. And it's the first time he's performed these songs in that type of setting in a long, long time. So that should be great. And after that, just more Lee Hazelwood are going to be putting out, working on some stuff for late November, a 45s box set of 11 45 singles.
Oh, man.
So yeah, we're trying to bankrupt you at every chance we can, as well as ourselves. So let's not forget that. But yeah. It's a lot of stuff for next year. There's going to be quite a bit of Hazelwood and the Rodriguez soundtrack. We're going to have vinyl for in a couple weeks too.
Cool.
That'll be exciting.
Cool.
So that's keeping us busy.
And you were also talking about the there's a Light in the Attic road trip coming up too. Could you say a little bit about that too?
Yeah, every year or so we do these annual Light in the Attic road trips where we rent like a 15-person passenger van, take out most of the seats, and fill it with about thousands of records and CDs that we can fit, and drive down, in this case, the West Coast from Seattle to LA and back, visiting about, I think this trip's 58 record stores.
Mm.
Over a 10-day period, about 30,000 miles. And these are stores that we sell direct to or, have a relationship with, most of them. And we go and deliver records, and they kind of see stuff and say hello. And it's really great. And a friend of ours, Miles, is going to be documenting the trip by putting up every day little YouTube videos of kind of the stores we're hitting. And we had a contest where you could win a seat in the van. And this guy, Matt from Oklahoma, won. Actually, I don't know if they're supposed to announce that because the announcement's coming on Tuesday. But for all you people that are really hoping to win, I'm sorry. But we went with this guy who was a big Light in the Attic supporter for years. And he had to submit a letter, and he wrote a heck of a good letter of why he should be in the van. So we're going to be doing that, and it's going to coincide with the show down here. And but we've done a few of those trips. We did one around the Toronto, Detroit area, and we've done East Coast ones. And we always love record stores, so it's more of a vacation.
Yeah, it is. It is very nice. We were talking about this while some of the music was playing, just how especially here in LA, but in some other parts as well, just how nice it is to see new vinyl stores, not just record stores, but, you know, like vinyl only stores, mm-hmm. you know, opening up all over the place. And it's nice to have some good sounds to put in it too.
It is. There's so many new shops popping up everywhere. Portland's another spot that's had a lot. Mm-hmm. Seattle too. But yeah, the LA area, there's been a lot of good ones.
Well, Matt, it's really been a pleasure sitting in with you and talking to you about the label and all the things that have happened in the past with Light in the Attic. And it'll be interesting, you know, as things move forward, hopefully getting you to come in here. And also, I mean, I know that you occasionally spin as well, and a big fan of vinyl and a lot of different types of vinyl. And so maybe getting a guest DJ set out of you, a proper guest DJ set, would be pretty cool too.
Sure, that'd be wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah. So one more song for us, maybe, to lead us on out. What else do you have for us?
Yeah, I'm fighting over here what I should play next, but I think I got to go for the T.L. Barrett.
Okay, yeah, one of my favorites that you guys have put out, yeah.
Thank you. This is a great gospel soul record from Chicago, early 70s, and I got the title track is just so good. The whole thing's great, but we're going to go with Like a Ship.
All right, fantastic. The first song I actually played in our new house, this song right here, T.L. Barrett.
That's great.
And a Youth for Christ choir. So thanks again so much for coming in. Our guest has been Matt Sullivan from Light in the Attic Records, celebrating 10 years this year and doing some shows in Los Angeles and also Seattle to celebrate that 10-year anniversary, both of which I think are sold out. So if you didn't get tickets, you can't sleep on these things. You know?
Seattle has a few left.
There are a few left
but
for there, Seattle?
But not many. But, okay. So LA is long sold out.
Yeah, don't sleep. And here is some music that you definitely do not want to sleep on from T.L. Barrett from Light in the Attic. And you're hearing it on KPFK and Melting Pot.